This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, migrants reacted at this center. They set the center on fire and there was a kind of a mass riot after a 25-year-old woman from the Ivory Coast died at the center.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details on the story coming up.
Also, the chairman of Gambia's Electoral Commission reportedly has fled the country. And Nigeria aviation authorities are shutting down the airport in the capital Abuja for 6 weeks to repair a runway.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story in the Gambia, the chairman of the country's electoral commission reportedly has fled the country. Reuters reports Aliyu Muammar Ngai has received death threats after declaring that incumbent president Yahya Jammeh lost the December 1st election to opposition candidate Adama Barrow. The whereabouts of the commission chairman are not known. On December 9th, after initially conceding defeat, Jammeh rejected the election results. He says there were voting irregularities and wants to challenge the ballot count in Gambia's Supreme Court. The international community has condemned his decision. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports that Gambia's opposition says Jammeh should be considered a rebel leader if he refuses to step down at the end of his term in January on the 19th and takes up arms.
Nigerian aviation authorities are shutting down the airport in the capital Abuja for 6 weeks to repair a runway. Nnamdi Azikiwe International Airport is the country's second busiest airport. At least two planes were damaged in the past 5 months flying into Abuja. The popular international airlines Emirates has stopped flying into the airport because it says the runway is too dangerous. Flights will be diverted to the Kaduna City Airport, 250 kilometers away. Although shuttle buses will be available to travel between the two locations, the route is a popular target for bandits who sometimes kidnap travelers for ransom. The government plans to provide security for the buses traveling to and from Abuja.
Kenyan parents and teachers are in shock after the education minister released results of the 2016 university entrance exam. Just 15% of the more than half million candidates qualified. The disappointing results represent a significant drop from last year after officials cracked down on cheating on the exam. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The number of students who attained an A grade in the 2016 exams dropped by 95% compared to the previous year. In 2015, in a single school with 202 students, all the candidates scored grade A, but the next year only 141 students across the country got a similar mark. The overall poor performance follows new strict rules designed to cap cheating. The 2016 exam results were released 2 months earlier than expected. Kenyan media reports say examination officials released the results early after some school principals pressured them to award their students high marks. Some principals are accused of bribing examiners between $100 to $160 to give their students good grades. John Mugo is director of data at Twaweza East Africa, a non-profit working to improve education and government responsiveness in the region. He says education officials will face a lot of tough questions.
Questions are being raised on whether those heads of the management should be brought to account to the public what happened. If they were being involved in massive irregularities, then I think we should not just keep quiet. They should be made to account. But then the other question that Kenyans have is quality. Are those students really learning, or have we been drilling them to just pass the test such that when the test changes slightly, then they all fail?
Education expert Tom Kinbaraza says credibility has been restored to the education sector. But another challenge awaits.
But now we look at now the many students who are affected. Where are we going to have them? The ministry should come up with a way to ensure that at least the majority of the students at least go somewhere, not whereby education is only meant for few students who pass.
Kenya National Examinations Council Chairman Professor George Magoha argues students do not need to get good grades to be successful. Baraza echoes that view.
They always equalize passing exams with an excellence. If somebody says, let's say somebody gets a B plus or an E, he's seen as a failure. They don't emphasize that in most cases on talent, where somebody is talented. So you see, like most of those candidates who scored low grades are very much demoralized, and maybe they think that their future, their luminous future, has been twisted.
Nevertheless, the Ministry of Education said it will look at where the problem lies after the shocking exam results. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In a violent protest, refugees and migrants set an Italian migrant center on fire yesterday in Kona near Venice. The mass riot was in response to the death of a 25-year-old woman from Ivory Coast who died at the migrant center yesterday. The revolt erupted in the center, a former army base which hosts around 1,000 migrants. 25 workers, including two doctors and a nurse, were blocked from leaving the site until police intervened and freed them at 1:40 a.m. this morning. The outburst of anger comes as Italy's government announced yesterday that it is introducing stricter registration measures for migrants and increased efforts to send them back home. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments in Rome and first spoke on the death of the young Ivorian woman in Kona.
She was Sandrine Bakayoko, who had arrived at the center 4 months ago after traveling across the Mediterranean from Libya to Sicily. And the migrants who reacted were angry because they felt that the medical emergency had not received the attention it deserved and that medical help took far too long to arrive, and that's why the woman died. So they set fire to the center, and essentially the staff there were under siege for several hours until police intervened. That is quite interesting because Italian media reports are suggesting that the centre management were being investigated for fraud and mismanagement before this riot actually occurred. So it sounds like there was some tension building up there before this terrible tragedy yesterday.
What kind of conditions were there before the fire started?
It's not really clear, but we know that there are around 1,000 migrants in this particular centre. It's quite close to Venice in northeast Italy. And there's been a huge political reaction, as you can imagine, to the riot that broke out. The local president of the region, Luca Zaia, said this behaviour is completely unacceptable and is calling for those who perpetrated the violence to be expelled from Italy. We're getting all sorts of reactions from politicians who feel that this is really an indication of the numbers that Italy is being forced to host, the incoming migrants that show no sign of slowing down, and some of the crowded conditions that exist perhaps in the migrant centres.
The Italian government, they will be introducing stricter registration for migrants, and they're going to step up repatriation of illegal immigrants. So what is the response to that, and where are they in this process?
This has just been announced this week, and it's partly in reaction to the capture and the killing of the Berlin terror suspect, Anas Amri, who was killed by police just before Christmas on the streets of Milan. And he came from Tunisia. He was a migrant who landed at Lampedusa and served time in Sicilian prisons before moving out of Italy and into Germany. People here are very nervous about the numbers of migrants coming in. There's a great deal of concern that there may be potential terrorists hiding amongst migrants, and the government wants to do more to ensure that people are vetted more stringently, that their fingerprints are taken, they're registered, they're identified, and they are talking about setting up far more centres, migrant processing centres throughout Italy, and stepping up repatriation. Now, last year, around 40,000 illegal immigrants were identified in Italy, but only a few thousand were sent back home. And part of the problem is Italy doesn't have bilateral agreements in place with particular countries. Today, the Interior Minister, Marco Minniti, is in Tunisia and Malta to try and step up those arrangements to make it far more easy for the government to send illegal immigrants away from Italy and deport them.
And it seems as if migrants are continuing to flee their countries to head over into Europe, even though these are the cold winter months that we are looking at, January, February, and it still hasn't seemed to slow down.
Well, there seems to be, as you said, no sign of it slowing down, despite the incredibly difficult winter conditions and high waves and strong winds and low temperatures. More than 100 migrants were rescued on Monday after drifting for hours in the central Mediterranean after their rubber boat's engine failed. And we've continued to see this flow. We've had around 180,000 migrants come to Italy by sea in 2016. And there are some estimates that say that there are 1 million waiting to leave Libya and make that crossing across the Mediterranean to Europe.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Germany's interior minister has proposed restructuring security protocols that would allow the federal government to deport asylum seekers believed to be a security risk. The action follows last month's fatal truck attack on a Christmas market in Berlin that killed 12 people. The proposal would give federal agencies greater power to directly carry out deportations rather than leaving it up to individual states. Each of the 16 German states currently has its own security and intelligence services. Just days after the December 19th attack, the Tunisian suspect, a failed asylum seeker, was killed in a shootout in Italy.
A former Burundi president has blamed the country's leadership for the ongoing political turmoil and violence that has gripped Burundi. His remarks came after he returned to Burundi from Belgium. Reporter Moses Habayarimana has the story.
Sylvestre Ntibantunganya went to Belgium after the political crisis erupted when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in the office. Critics called it unconstitutional. Nkurunziza won re-election, but hundreds have died in violence and hundreds of thousands have fled to neighboring countries. The former Burundi president was deposed by Pierre Buyoya in a military coup in 1996 after replacing President Cyprien Ntaryamira, who was killed in a plane crash with Rwandan President Juvenal Habyarimana in 1994. The Rwandan genocide erupted soon after. Ntibantunganya denied he fled the country and that he came back to contribute in peace.
I don't fled. I go in Belgium for an activity, and after I was prepared to come back. But when I arrived in Belgium, police said to me that my passport was a stolen passport. I have never been a refugee in Belgium. Never. Now I'm back in Burundi. The situation about security is not like it was. There are here. You also, you can see it.
Though the political environment in Burundi has already relatively improved compared to 2015, Ntibantunganya blames the Burundi leadership for failing to make peace prevail since 1972.
We Burundians leaders, it's a problem of leaders. It's not a problem of the Burundi people, all the people. It's the problem of Burundi leadership, which after produce bad effects on the society, on the political way, on the security. So the first responsibility is about the leadership of Burundi.
Meanwhile, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza says he looks forward to working with Donald Trump as the new U.S. president and Antonio Guterres as the new U.N. Secretary General, but he's still cautious. He says he knows that the new leadership will work very well with the Burundi government and that he wanted to tell the international community that any organization that takes a decision without Burundi's government's consultation will be rejected starting from this year. Burundi government has rejected both African Union and United Nations resolutions on the deployment of peacekeepers in the country, warning that it could be considered as an invasion in the country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and at 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The chairman of Gambia's Electoral Commission reportedly has fled the country. And Nigeria's aviation authorities are shutting down the airport in the capital Abuja for repair of the runway. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Doctors say mental health trouble is a hidden crisis in much of Africa, but lay health workers in Zimbabwe have been offering private therapy sessions on the grounds of clinics in Harare. A trial conducted by the University of Zimbabwe, along with the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and King's College London, shows the therapy has led to big improvements in mental health. As Henry Ridgewell reports, the treatment could serve as a blueprint for tackling mental health problems in Africa.
Doctors estimate one in four Zimbabweans suffers depression or anxiety, but there are just 12 psychiatrists treating the entire population of 14 million, says Dr. Victoria Sims of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
We can't possibly go the route of training psychiatrists and psychologists because it would take 15 years. How are we going to provide treatment?
Local doctors have come up with a simple but seemingly highly effective answer. Wooden seats, so-called friendship benches, were installed on the grounds of several Harare health clinics. Visitors were offered six one-on-one counselling sessions with lay health workers, known as grandmother health providers. Again, Dr. Victoria Sims.
The very lowest cadre of the health system, to train those women to offer problem-solving therapy. And so the patient explains what all their problems are, and it's opening up the mind in the sense of allowing the patient to see that they can do something about their problems.
The study involved more than 550 patients. After 6 months, only 14% of the patients in the friendship bench group reported symptoms of depression, compared to 50% in a control group. They were also five times less likely to have suicidal thoughts. The co-founder of the Friendship Bench program, Dr. Dixon Chibanda of the University of Zimbabwe, told VOA via Skype the intervention had a wide range of benefits.
Not only a mental health sort of package, but a package that actually improved outcomes of things like hypertension, diabetes, and adherence to medication for people living with HIV.
That success has led to friendship benches being rolled out to 60 clinics in Harare and two other cities. The Canadian government is helping to fund the expansion through its Grand Challenges Canada aid program, making it one of the biggest programs in sub-Saharan Africa. Researchers say it could be a blueprint for mental health in low-income regions and could even offer lessons for treatment in richer countries. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Officials in Malawi say they are on high alert for a possible invasion of army worms, which have attacked crops in neighboring Zambia, which is spraying pesticides in an effort to halt the spread. From Blantyre, Lamek Masina reports on the latest on the situation.
Army worms are caterpillars that feed on green pastures and cereal crops like maize, a staple food in Zambia and Malawi. The worms invaded Zambian maize crops last month in four provinces, Copper Belt, Central, Eastern and Lusaka. Figures from the Zambian Disaster and Management Mitigation Unit released Monday show that nearly 90,000 hectares of maize fields have been affected across the country. Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Agriculture, Julius Shawa, told a local radio Monday efforts to control the spread are underway.
We are very much on top of things, and the measures that have been taken are procurement of chemicals for which are being distributed to various districts where the MOM outbreak is throughout the country.
He said government has dispatched 15,000 litres of pesticides to help contain the worms, but observers are concerned any delay in controlling the outbreak may hurt the crop yield for 2017. A journalist based in Lusaka, Zambia, Derek Sinjera, says the armyworm's invasion does not pose a serious threat to the country's future harvests.
The food security is assured in that the armyworms are not quite spread, and the fact that the government has put in these measures so that food, the harvest is still going to be achieved.
But farmers in neighboring Malawi are worried. Nearly half of the population of Malawi is dealing with food shortages caused largely by the El Nino weather pattern, which caused floods and drought in the past 2 years. Philip Kapwenga is a farmer in the Chinji district, which borders Zambia.
Of course, if armyworms are getting up within the bordering area, sometimes we are affected.
He says whenever the armyworms invade the neighboring district, they are sometimes affected, and it means their maize production will be low. As a result, they will face another food shortage situation. Malawi's Minister of Agriculture, George Chabonda, told VOA the country is ready to deal with any caterpillars that may spread from Zambia.
We think we can definitely manage. We have pesticides which can deal with it. And from past experiences, we have been able to deal with such issues.
A year ago, Malawi successfully contained an armyworm invasion that affected 7 districts across the country. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa, this is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Two Face. Nato C. Hey.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.